Blog Talk Radio.
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
So your world is torn apart, and you're left with a broken heart, and you feel that there's no real healing inside. Oh no, but this I know, it's more than a feeling. Jesus said it in his word, you cannot feel it, just believe it. He'll make everything, he'll make it all.
Yes, he will. I am Jackie Wayans, your host of Don't Give Up Radio, and I'm thankful for to be able to be with you here another week. And I know I often say that, but as you can tell from week to week, there are various things that happen in the world. There are challenges on every side, and we're seeing so much destruction, so much heartache, that the need for inspiration is greater than ever. And I'm thankful that this show can present itself as an opportunity to provide a source of inspiration, a source of peace. When I think of the Scott family and what they must be going through, and when I think of the parents of Nick Thomas and what they must be going through, there's the families that lost their Christian relatives and family and friends in Africa to a massacre. There are things that are going on around us all the time. And it could cause you to say, yep, I just want to give up. There's just too much going on in this world. There's nothing good, and I'm ready to throw in the towel. But wherever evil abounds, grace evermore abounds. And my guest tonight is a wonderful example of this, that born into a family that what we would call today dysfunctional, and wasn't given all of the tools, so to speak, but because of the power of God in his life at a crucial moment in time, he was able to find out that he could actually have a life that was very much different than anything that he ever imagined before. Frank Thomas, author of I Rise, thank you for being here tonight. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I am always fortunate when I have the opportunity to meet or find out about people who have stories to share and tell that I think will impact my listeners very well here and represent the show Don't Give Up very well. And former guest Kendall Triplett gave you a shout out to me a few months ago and said, you've got to talk to this guy, you've got to check him out. And I looked at your video footage and I thought to myself, there's no way. I mean, I was actually in tears by the time I was finished listening to your story. And you know what? It was tears during the story because it's kind of like, oh my gosh, this is so sad, but there was completely different tears at the end of the story because it's like, oh my gosh, look at what the power of God can do. So let's get right into sharing with our listeners about that story and who you are. And you know, you and your brother grew up together, and what town are you from, by the way, originally? What's your hometown?
I was born in Des Moines, Iowa, but raised in Kansas City, Missouri.
Okay. And so what was the family life that you were born into? What did that look like back then?
Well, I mean, if you can imagine being born to a 16-year-old mother who then had two kids by the time she was 18, a father the same age, it was pretty difficult. I mean, the one thing I can say is that, you know, at least my mother didn't abort me or give me away, but it was tough because there were two kids with kids.
So that does sound difficult within itself, but there were other things that manifested itself over time when did you start to realize as a little boy that your family might have been just a little bit different than everyone else?
You know, early on, I couldn't recognize it, to be honest with you, because my entire family was dysfunctional, not just my parents, but my mother, you know, brothers and sisters, and my father's brothers and sisters. I had a dysfunctional family. And it wasn't until I got into, like, grade school, you know, second and third grade, and beginning to have friends who were different races. Their fathers lived at home, and I'm like, you know, my father's in prison. There's something different here. And that was when it began to, you know, I began to recognize that, hey, we're not your average American family.
Mm. Yeah, that's a very relatable point, I'm sure, to many people listening, even to myself. I grew up with a single mom. And on the block that I live, friends grew up with their mom, right? There was no dad. So I just thought that was normal. It was never questioned until, you know, I was in school and we were told to make a card for Father's Day. And I was like, what is Father's Day? You know, what is it? And that's when you start to realize, okay, wait a minute, there's an element that's missing here. So here you are, you know, you're raised by a single mom. When you say dysfunctional, give me an example. What were the things that were going on? What was being introduced into your home?
Well, I mean, if you can imagine being 7, 8 years old with a little brother who's 2 years younger than you, and somehow you find yourself home alone for hours. I mean, when my mother went to work, there wasn't money for a babysitter. There wasn't money for, like, summer camp. It was, hey, we do the best we can. So don't answer the phone. Don't open the door. Don't look out the windows. Keep everything shut. And so those are kind of some of the early indications of, yeah, we're the only ones locked up in the house all summer long where everybody else is outside playing. And, you know, we're like prisoners in our own home.
And so how did you and your brother cope with that? How did you make it through?
Well, I mean, if anyone has a sibling, you know, they can probably relate to this, but, you know, my brother and I, we had each other. And on some level, he was my first best friend. I mean, we did everything together. I mean, we got in trouble together. We played together. We fought, you know, each other. We fought together. I mean, we did everything together. And so he was my little buddy, and I was his big brother, and you know, we did the best with what we had.
And that's what most of us do. Kids are very resilient, you know, they're very resourceful, and I could see you doing the best that you can. But the reality was, mom wasn't there a lot, and you mentioned being fatherless and dad being in jail. What was he in jail for, and what were the effects of you not having a father in the household?
Well, he was, you know, he had a drug addiction, so he got into burglaries and stealing cars, and then whatever he could do to get drug money. You know, it definitely impacted us tremendously, and on some level, I think it still does, because it doesn't matter how old you get, you're never too old to have a father who you can look to for counsel, encouragement, unconditional love when you seem to be faced with difficulties in life. But at that time, it was, we used to get teased, I remember, by some of my own cousins saying, you know, your daddy's in prison, your daddy's a jailbird. And, you know, you can just imagine how that affects a young kid's self-esteem.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, you know, it's interesting because we were talking earlier and we were sharing about the fact that the parent that's there gets more blame in some ways than the parent that's not there. Can you elaborate on that and share a little bit?
Yeah, that's really one of the unfortunate, I think, circumstances that come out of situations where there's a single parent. You know, a single parent is trying to do the best they can, and many of them don't have much to work with when men have basically abandoned their families for whatever reason. you know, my mother made mistakes, and I didn't think at the time until I was a grown man. I didn't think at the time when I was a child to think, hey, she's doing the best she can. That you know, it's not all her fault. It's my dad's fault too. But because she was the one there who was making all the mistakes, she got the blame. And I didn't have a real relationship with him. So I didn't, there was really no emotional bond with him. I didn't, you know, I just didn't have, you know, a certain circumstance to blame him for. So he basically got a pass.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing how that works, and it's unfortunate, but that's the way it is in relationships. The one who stays often pays the price. But now talk to me about, you know, you mentioned mom making her fair share of mistakes and things being tight financially. And I know that God in his faithfulness always sends someone around to be a bright light to us. I've heard of it many times, the show. You had an uncle that played an important role, an uncle that your mom kind of encouraged the relationship, but more so for selfish means. Can you talk to us, share about that relationship?
Yeah, it was. He was a man who was married to my mother's sister, so he wasn't a blood uncle, but he was the closest thing that I had to a father growing up, and I idolized him. I mean, I wanted to be him. He was a successful business owner. He dressed well. He drove a nice car. He was put together. He had this commanding presence, but a common touch. He was just everything that I ever wanted to be in a man. The downside, you know, to having him was that he wasn't my father. I mean, there was a dynamic going on in the fact that he was married and had three kids of his own. And that even caused some problems in my family as I was growing up. So there were times where even though I aspired to be him and he you know, nurtured me on some level, he could only go so far. He wasn't my father. So that and even in that, it caused some level of
it caused that because, you know, your mother also looked to him for financial assistance, correct? And she would often have you be the go-between with that. And there was this, tell us about that one time where that, it was like the straw on the camel's back. It was the last time.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there was a time when I was about 12 years old, and my mother used to obviously send me to go get money from him when we came up short on rent or utilities or whatever. And one day he would pick me up every day during the summer for work. He gave me a job. I had a job since I was 11. And I knew I had to ask him for money, but I just didn't have the courage to ask him when he picked me up in the morning. So I dreaded it all day long. 12 hours later, here we are in his office. We're the last two people there. And I go into his office. I sit in a chair across the desk from him, and immediately my head just bows to the floor, and I just start weeping uncontrollably, and because I'm so, like, my pride is hurt. And he says, "What's wrong? What's wrong?" And about the third time, he caught himself, and he knew exactly what was wrong. He grabbed his checkbook and he wrote me a check for $500, and he slid it across the table, the desk, to me. And then he stood up and went into his pocket, grabbed his money clip off his out of his pocket, and he pulled five $100 bills off his money clip. And he walks over to a bookcase in his office, and he pulls out an encyclopedia, letter F, and he says, "You see this? This is encyclopedia, letter F, for Frank." He said, "I'm putting $500 in this encyclopedia. Do you understand me?" He's like, "There will always be $500 here. If you need anything, you come and get what you need. Do I make myself clear?" And I couldn't look at him in the eyes. I just couldn't. I lost myself in him. And that day, I made a decision, and I had no idea the impact of that decision. But the decision I made was that I would never, ever, ever ask anybody for help ever again. I'll get my own.
You know, many of us listening to that story from the outside think, oh, wow, that was such a positive moment. Oh, how great, you know. But there's something about having to bring yourself to that level where it breaks you down so much to even have to ask, that you build that wall up and you say, never again. I'm going to be self-sufficient. I'm going to take care of myself. And you actually, you know, made it to college, but because of that mentality and even your history thus far in life, that opportunity initially was squandered. Talk to us about your college experience and, you know, how you ended up there and what did your first year look like?
Yeah, I mean, after high school, I went to college, and it was by chance. I mean, my best friend, he had two parents, and I was actually living with him when I graduated from high school. And he was going to college, and I just basically did what he did, what his parents were directing him to do. I mean, I didn't know how I was going to pay for it. I had no idea how it was all going to work out. But somehow I got in, and I went. But I was broken, basically. I mean, I was lost myself. I never really got the chance to live a kind of a carefree childhood. So when I was there, I just abused it. I got away from all my problems. I was like 700 miles away from quote unquote home. And you know, I just began to drink. And I just cut loose, just lost myself in that time.
What do you think because you hear this a lot about kids, you know, leaving the city, having the opportunity to go to college, and then they just party all the time. And I think our perception is, oh, they're just being, you know, childish or careless. But what was it for you? What do you think was the reason why you responded that way?
Well, you know, on some level, as a child, you don't even know what dysfunction is. Like, you don't know how to explain it as a child, but there was stress and negative energy my whole upbringing. And so when I got to college after graduating from high school, I mean, being several states away from all my problems, you know, I let loose. But, you know, there's an old saying that goes, everywhere I go, there I am. I was dysfunctional, and I thought I was getting away, but the dysfunction came with me, and I didn't even know it. I didn't even know it. I was just a hurting little boy.
Exactly. I think that's the key point, that little boy in you never had a chance to be a little boy. He never had a chance to really come out and play, and here you are in an opportunity that needs you to be balanced, to know when to have fun, when to study, and, you know, balance your life. But if you've never had the freedom and you never had the opportunity to be a child, to be a kid, then that's, you take the opportunity at the wrong time. And unfortunately, we know that what happens when our youth go off to college and do that, the college says, nice to have had you for two semesters, you have to go now, you know, and you wound up on academic probation. When we come back from this song, we're going to find out the turns that Frank's life took right after that.
Hey, still a child, born stone, living worthless, raised in abandoned buildings, raised as a Muslim. But Jesus Christ came and changed that. Would it be a good plan? Chicago, Jackson Park, hospital where they birthed him. Cops was a black stone, abusive, man, he heard us. Disowned in court, selling crack powder. Age of 14, what does this mean? I realize the place God made my home gave struggles that I know, but it made me who I am. I'm blessed to say was preparation for my life to fight for Jesus Christ. Started in a shop. I was born in 82 in Chicago, but it made this man like you in Chicago. I was born in 82 in Chicago.
full-time hustler. It's me against the world, you can tell me nothing. Man, the ghetto stole my youth straight away. Yes, they did. The streets greeted me with no defeat. Stomach straight, growling, had to rob just to eat. It's funny how you never know exactly who you be. Who never thought the youngster from the hundreds would end up in me?
I realize the place God made my home gave struggles that I know, but it made me who I am. I'm blessed to say it was preparation for my life to fight for Jesus Christ. It started in a show.
For my life, Jesus saved his life. That's Ishkia, and he's really a really great rapper. I was introduced to that song by you, and I really think that it really speaks to those who've had really hard upbringings, the you know, family life, neighborhood, all the challenges that say, you know, you're going to be a statistic, you're not going to make it out of things. You're listening to Don't Give Up Radio. I'm your host, Jackie Wayans, and we're here with Frank Thomas, and we're just talking about his life, and we just set it up for you in terms of, you know, what mom and dad was like and what, you know, the different scenarios that he had to deal with. But now here he is. He's 19 years old, and he did his first year in college, and then not only did he not do well academically, but on top of that, didn't have enough money to continue studying, and you were forced to come back home, quote unquote. At that point, what was the turn in your life? What did things look like for you? How desperate was it?
Well, it was bleak. I had, at the time, I lost basically my best friend. Because of drinking alcohol, I was on the verge of becoming an alcoholic myself, like my mother. And I had to go back to the place from where I had basically tried to run from, back to my mother's home, because I had nowhere else to go. And by this time, my mother was dealing drugs, and I found myself desperate, wanting to get away, but having no ability financially to do such. And I compromised myself. I began to hustle drugs in the streets, just like my mother, just like most of my cousins, my older cousins. And and I got arrested and pled guilty to a felony for selling drugs.
Okay, so now let's break that down a little bit. There was a raid, and there was drugs found in the car, but were those drugs yours?
No. That was an unfortunate situation where my mother, dealing drugs, she was hiding the drugs from my father, who was a drug user, because by this time they had gotten back together. And unfortunately, there was a raid, and during that raid, they found the drugs in the glove box of my car, and I had no idea they were there. My mother knew she put them there, but I went to jail for them, and she basically betrayed me, turned her back on me.
She didn't come forward. She didn't say, that's mine, you know, not his. She let you take the situation.
Yes.
And you were only out there doing this for about 3 weeks, right? It's not like you were out there for years or anything like that. You get arrested, but you also get introduced to the gospel. Share that moment.
Well, if you can imagine, I was facing 60 years in prison, and
60,
I had
60.
Nowhere, 6-0, 6-0.
Wow.
I had nowhere to go. I mean, where do you go when the one person in the world who's supposed to love you unconditionally turns their back on you? I mean, there's that old saying, mama's baby, daddy's maybe. Everybody knows their mama. You can't, you know, you come out of your mother's womb. You don't confuse who your mother is. And when my mother turned her back on me, I had nowhere else to go. I had nowhere else to go except to a God that I really didn't know.
Wow. I have to pause because that's so heavy. So 60 years, you're 19 years old, and 60 years, you know, my day job, one of the things we deal with is the issue of juvenile justice, and this is just the thing that is just so ridiculous. But here you are facing those charges. How did you get introduced to the gospel, and what impact did that have on you? How did it change the trajectory of your decisions?
Well, I began to start praying, and I had no idea how to pray. I just knew that I needed God. I needed intervention. And it's funny, I grew up watching Sanford and Son. And on that show, Aunt Esther, she was a Bible-toting, you know, beating
right.
Fred Sanford over the head with the Bible. And she used to say a scripture, the truth will set you free, and that's all I knew. And I prayed that over and over. Lord, you said the truth will set me free. You said the truth will set me free. And I began to read the Bible, and one day I just happened to be reading it, and a guy came up to me. And he asked me what I was reading, and you know, he had seen me carrying the Bible around the tier of the jail cell, and come to find out, he was a pastor's child. He was raised in the church. Go figure. And he is the one who led me in the sinner's prayer. He was the one who helped me accept Jesus as my personal Lord and Savior. And I'll tell you, that was the first time ever in my life. I was facing 60 years in prison, but I had a peace for the first time in my life.
Mm. 60 years in prison, you came up on trial, and what was the verdict?
Not guilty. There was a 3-count indictment. I was found not guilty on all 3 counts.
And you know, that's amazing. You
mm-hmm.
know that's absolutely amazing. And so in a situation where you could have spent your whole life in jail, the rest of your life in jail, you have an encounter with the Lord. And even before I elaborate more, when you heard from the Lord, when you prayed, what did you hear him say to you, and what did you say to him in return?
Look, I promise the Lord that if you get me out of here, Lord, you will never have to worry about me again. And I had this overwhelming confidence that I was going to be set free. Like, I was going to be set free. And I just, I remember, you know, saying it to other inmates who were in the jail with me, and they're like, "Man, look, we saw you on the news. You're done. You're just like us. You're done." And I just wouldn't receive it. I wouldn't receive it. I knew beyond all knowing that I was going to be freed.
I love that, and it came to fruition for you. Not only were you freed, but you went back to school. You graduated. I think you graduated at the top of your class.
Not at the top of my class, but I was the student commencement speaker at my college graduation.
Wonderful,
yeah.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. And now by that point of graduation, I've seen from some of the footage, your mom was there in attendance. Take a minute and describe your process to forgiveness, because that's a big deal. And some of us have trouble forgiving over much smaller than someone letting you take the fall for the rest of your life in jail. So how did you get to that place?
Well, less than a year later, after I was got out of my trouble, my mother ended up in prison. And when I left my family in the Midwest to move to Southern California, I was harboring a lot of anger toward my mother. But somehow, miraculously, I came to an understanding that, one, the anger and unforgiveness was only harming me. I was the one who was getting hurt by harboring that anger. And then the other, you know, just understanding that I came to was, on some level, my mother did the best she could with what she was given. Like, my mother wasn't given much in the first place. As a matter of fact, my mother's got a, you can say, better or worse story than I do. And I knew that my mother tried. It wasn't that my mother didn't try. She made mistakes. My mother did the best she could, and she didn't abort me. She didn't, you know, I mean, she tried, but my mother, the stress and the pains of the world, they took her under. They took her under. And,
yeah, go ahead.
And so I knew that, you know, I had to forgive her. She's my mother, and I couldn't stop loving her.
Mm-hmm. And that's something I want to, as people are listening and maybe shaking their heads, it's something you can't do if you don't have the power of God within you. And just like Frank has already shared, he had to come to that place where he surrendered completely to God and said, "I'm yours, you know, have your way with my life," and believe the best for his life from God. And I always say on this show, Romans 10:9, that if you confess with your mouth and believe in your heart Jesus Christ is Lord, you will be saved. So that's the beginning of the relationship. That's the beginning of the communication between the two of you, being a part of his family and allowing him to communicate and guide and direct your life. And once that begins, there's that look into your own heart, and you can't point a finger without first looking within and seeing what you need to correct, what you need to change about yourself. And so, Frank, you came to a place where you realized, like you said, this is hurting. It will hurt me more to harbor unforgiveness towards her than to just forgive her. And you know, as I said, you graduated, you moved on. You wound up working. Someone who was going to spend 60 years of their life in jail, rotting away, doing nothing to help society, you now have the opportunity to work for Fortune 500 companies, and you did that for a whole decade. And then there were some changes, some shifting and transitionings happening to you. Why, once you were at a place of comfort, you'd made it, you know, you're making the money, you have nothing to worry about, you have a home, you have family, why think about making a transition?
You know, I got my work ethic, my drive early in life. My uncle gave me a job when I was 11 years old, and he paid me hourly. And I remember when I learned about overtime, that you get paid time and a half, they used to have to put me out of there because I was trying to make $1 million every single day. And And so I literally had this insatiable drive. I was driven out of insecurity though, Jackie. And so I was making more money than I ever dreamed I could make. I'm standing at the highest peak I ever stood on, and I was miserable. I was miserable. The money, I thought money was my answer, you know, but I realized that money was never my answer, and it wasn't even my problem either. And I was at a crossroads, and it was one of those things where I knew that God didn't call me to do what I was doing. My insecurity led me down that path, and God was calling me down a different path. And I had one of two choices: to die on that mountain miserable, maybe wealthy but miserable, or come down and do what God has called me to do.
Right. And just to clarify, you know, people might be thinking, you know, hey man, you crazy, there's nothing wrong with making money. You're not saying that, because there are people who are called to work in that field that do that job very well and find a way to make a difference. But it's just that God was saying something different to you. He was asking you to do something else, and he actually promised you that two things would happen, that you would produce two types of work, and you've actually done it. Share with us, talk to us about iRise.
Well, God promised me that back when I was 19, that my story was going to be a book, and I finished the book. And he told me that book was going to be a movie, and God has never lied to me. I'm holding steadfast, you know, in belief that my story will one day be a movie.
That's absolutely awesome. So you're an author.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact that, you know, here you come from, forget humble beginnings, like just, you know, down and out beginnings. You had an opportunity to just have your whole life washed away by spending it in the judicial system. And not only did you turn it around through God's power and go back to school and become, you know, a businessman and did very well by that, but you're willing to take a leap of faith and allow him to move through you, and now you've authored this book, and I know you also do coaching as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, I do.
Coaching. It's a testament to God and his power and the fact that he can do anything in our lives if we just allow ourselves to be in his hands. Let's listen to that track by Kendall Triplett, and when we come back, we'll find out a little bit more about your life today.
What the world keeps spinning, wondering if this is really living.
Trying to get out, just
get out the box.
Feeling trapped inside,
cause it's been locked up.
You dream big and you keep believing, praying that this is a wishful thinking.
Feeling your faith about
to drop.
But you know you're not
gonna stop.
Oh no, not when there's more. Better will come after the storm. So through all of the pain, just keep.
Will
oh no, not when there's more. Better will come
Nothing's impossible. If you want it, grab a hold. It's up to us to make choices in our lives. And a lot of times we blame everything on God. We throw our hands up and say, why God? But God has given us as human beings the ability to make choices. He's given us free will. He's given us dominion, if you will. And we need to be able to step into that, especially those who say that they believe and have faith in his power and in his existence. Nothing is impossible for you. You can do anything. And, you know, Frank, you are definitely an example of that, because who would have thought that those little boys in that house would have, you know, one of them would have come into the story that you're telling us right now. I do want to take a moment and ask you about your brother, though, because there were two of you in that scenario. And so how is he doing?
You know, he's married. You know, he has three children. He's like me. He didn't get out unscathed. But he's, you know, he's had his own battles with alcohol. I mean, it lasted for far longer than it lasted for me. I mean, mine was kind of a year or two stint. You know, in a lot of ways, Jackie, he had it worse than I did. You know, and, you know, I got away. I ran away. He stayed during those teenage years. And you know, he had to deal with a greater burden on some level.
Right.
But I pray for him all the time. He's, again, like I told you before, he's my first best friend.
Right. Yeah, it is difficult, you know, those moments when we decide to live with a friend, or we, you know, go away to college, and it's for your own sanity, your state of mind. I mean, you are a child yourself. You're really just trying to figure out your own path, and then, you know, this tug of war inside of you, because you feel a responsibility to the person. But I'm sure, being the brother that you are, that you've reached out and you've tried in ways to communicate and support. And so it's now up to your brother to make the same choices that you've made for yourself, for himself. Talk to other young people, adults who are listening to themselves, you know, I've made too many mistakes. You know, this is just the course. I was just born into this situation. There's nothing that can be done for me. I have to hustle and be on my grind in order to make this work out here. What would you say to them?
First of all, I'd say, you know, for those who think they've messed up too bad, I'd say, you know, my whole book is all about one concept, and it's how Jesus saves. And the reality is that because Jesus saves, your past does not define your destiny unless you allow it to, and you're greater than your circumstances. I mean, I've been a convicted felon since I was 19 years old. I never let it be an excuse. I because I believe if you make one excuse, you'll make a million. You have to decide. You talk about choices. You have to decide to be unstoppable. I mean, I'm not saying it's easy, but you have to decide that you will let nothing stand in the path to achieving your God-given destiny. It's that simple. And you know, as far as hustling goes, those who think that they have to do something that is not legal or immoral, whatever you compromise to gain, you'll ultimately lose. I mean, you can never expect the best to happen when you're cheating or you're not giving your best. You will not win. You will lose. Even if you don't get caught, you will lose. You are compromising your soul. And there is a price to pay for everything. There's a price to pay for your wrongs, whether you think you got away with it or not.
That is a powerful statement. Whatever you compromise to gain, you will ultimately lose. You can't give up your integrity and expect to win. That is a very powerful statement. You know, I want to transition a little bit because our time is going so quickly. And I just have to ask, you know, you have a wife, you have, you know, your father, and you have a lovely family, by the way. And I wanted to know, what was the impact for you when you first looked into your daughter's eyes when she was born? What did you think to yourself, and how do you cope with being a father since you were someone who was fatherless yourself?
Well, I tell you, my daughter was born. She'll be 8 next month. She changed my life, because when I looked into her eyes the first time, one, never having a father who played a fatherly role in my life, I knew that I was going to be the best father that God could make me. And when I looked into her eyes, I knew that I wanted to make sure that my daughter had the best chance of living her God-given destiny, her calling, her purpose. And I knew, in order to give her the best chance of that happening, I had to model it for her. And that is what I live to do now, to be a man of courage, to be, you know, someone who works hard, to be someone who loves deeply, and knowing that my children have the benefit of having a father who loves them, having a mother who loves them, having a father who loves their mother and a mother who loves their father. I know some people take it for granted, but I'm telling you, if you take your parents for granted and you have them and they do for you, let me tell you, I just ask you to appreciate them, because look, I didn't have that, and children, there are children around the world who wish they had it.
Definitely true. And it's even more interesting because you never intended on getting married. You had a whole philosophy on what you thought about women and marriage and how it would affect you. I want you to share that.
Yeah, I always used to say that I'm never getting married, and my reasoning, you know, to myself was that, because I thought a woman and, you know, children, a family could only slow me down. And the truth is that's exactly what they'll do. And it's for all the right reasons. But the truth of the matter, I had to get real with myself, because the worst kind of deception is self-deception. And the real reason that I didn't want to get married was I was afraid. I was afraid, based on my past, that I wouldn't be able to provide for a family, and that because I was afraid I couldn't even provide for myself. And so that kept me from allowing love to be a part of my life. But thank God that, you know, he worked on my heart and, you know, gave me the willingness to try to work at that and become the best, you know, man I could be the best husband I can be, the best father I could be.
And what was that like for your wife when you decided to leave the comfort of, you know, a Fortune 500 job and step out to really become an entrepreneur and do your own thing?
Well, you know, it's never easy, but my wife is. I mean, she's been absolutely supportive. She's been 100% supportive, and it's never easy. I mean, it isn't. I mean, you, and there are many people who go to work every day and who don't want to go to work, you know, working for somebody. They have dreams and aspirations of doing their own thing, and they don't, because there's fear. But my wife is just, she's been awesome. She's been awesome, and she's had to make sacrifices along with me, you know, in order to, you know, you're standing on a high mountain, you're making more money, and it seems like, you know, the spigot won't turn off, and then all of a sudden you have to find a new spigot. You know, that's challenging, to say the least, but her love has only strengthened me, has only allowed me to go do the things that I'm doing now. And Jackie, we haven't even seen the best yet. The best is yet to come.
Awesome. I love that. I love that. And I believe it too. So I know we haven't even scratched the surface of what you talk about or write about in your book. So tell the people how they can get a hold of your book and your coaching services also.
Yes. You can find information about my book by visiting my book website at www.thefrankthomasstory.com, or you can Google Rise, Even Death Can't Stop Me, and it's like number one on the Google search engine. And you can find out more about my coaching, consulting, and speaking services at www.coachft.com.
Now, do you coach, is it business coaching or personal coaching?
It's both. It's business coaching and people who are professionals who are trying to grow their careers.
Okay, great. Well, you know, you just said the full title of the book, which I neglected to do. I Rise, Even Death Can't Stop Me. Where did that come from? Because I think that's an important piece to this story.
Well, once I was freed, I made a promise to God that I would fulfill my God-given purpose, and I wouldn't even let death stop me. It's personal for me. It lets me know, it lets God know, and it lets those who read it know that I mean business. I'm serious. I'm serious about who I am in Christ. I'm serious about what God has called me to, and you can kick me, drag me, I'll be screaming, but I'm going. I'm going to be who God created me to be.
Absolutely awesome. Thank you so much, Frank, for sharing this evening. I believe the show will be an encouragement to someone who thinks their back is up against the wall and they have nowhere to turn, that they can realize they can look up, they can turn their head up, and that God will be right there, smiling right back at them. And it's not an easy road. You had to go through some tough things even after you said yes to the Lord, but it's nothing like going through it while holding his hand. So thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
Well, next week we are going to have Felicia Thomas, no relation to Frank. She is the mother of Nick Thomas, who was slain in Georgia about a month ago now, and the funeral is actually next weekend, and she's going to be on sharing, speaking to mothers about what she has faced and really talking about how your child and just the many things surrounding this situation. So please continue to keep your prayers for her and the Scott family and the many others who have lost loved ones to just violence and massacres. And you know, keep your head up. Don't get discouraged, because you exist in the part of the world where you are, and that's where you can make a difference. As I always say, don't let yourself down. Be your own best hero, because the greatest hero of all said that you were worth it when he gave for his life for you on the cross. Until next time, don't give up. I'll see you. Be here next week. And may all be well.
All my brothers standing on the front line, trying to provide for your family. All my sisters raising those babies by yourself. This one's for you. God sees you. gotta change things. That nothing goes without a little rain check. That no matter what they tell you, God is waiting and he's listening on the back of it gets better. If you're blessed to have healthy kids, say. If you're blessed to have a place to live, say. Stop chasing after everything you see. May not have everything you want, but you got everything you need.
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans.